Welcome to episode 262 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I am your host, Ian Martin, and today we're going to be finding out about the ski area of, and to give it its full name, Skiveld Wilderkaiser Brixental in Tyrol. Plus, we'll be discussing ski touring in Iceland and a new women-only trip heading there this winter. We also have snow reports from the opening day of the season in Verbier, which was 4 weeks early, and Sunshine Valley, the first ski resort to open in Canada, as well as your feedback. Now, before we meet our guests, I'd like to thank Tyrol, Austria, for sponsoring the Ski Podcast. Long-term listeners may recall I learned to ski in Tyrol a long time ago now, but I have a personal connection with the region. And this partnership means that we're going to have the opportunity to find out more about some of the great destinations there and how you can connect with the feeling of life, or I believe it's called Lebensgefühl, out there. So we're going to be finding out about one particular region in Tyrol in this episode, but let me start by introducing my guests. We have two first-timers on the show today, both representing the UK tour operator Maybe Ski. Firstly, I'm delighted to welcome Maybe Ski founder Nikki Maybe. Hi, Nikki. How are you?
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me. Yeah, very good, thanks.
Where are you?
I'm in Chamonix in France.
Yeah, I'm very jealous. How's it looking out the window just now?
It's good. There's plenty of snow on the top of the mountains and it's getting a little bit warmer at the moment, but we've had a decent early season.
Yeah, I've actually seen, got a couple of friends who live out there who don't mind doing a bit of touring, and they've already skied on the Aiguille de Midi, just on the kind of 200 metres or so just below that, and then more recently on Flégère, said it was a little bit warm. But the fact is that you can get up there and ski, and the lifts aren't opening for a while, so that's very encouraging. Secondly, I'd like to welcome ski guide and Iceland Air pilot, Sara Sigurðardóttir. Did I get that right, Sara?
Way well done.
Excellent. Yeah. How are you, Sara?
I am good.
And whereabouts are you?
I am located in Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland. And please ask me about the snow conditions.
Go on then, tell us. What's it looking like?
Well, we had record snow coming in last week, 40 centimeters in a day in October. And okay. We were actually skiing in the ski areas in Reykjavik.
Nice. Sorry, with lifts are skiing, or are you ski touring as well?
Yeah, lifts, yeah, and people are ski touring. People were ski touring. Current snow conditions are not that good still. We had a lot of rain after that snow, but we managed to ski last week.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we'll be talking about skiing in Iceland a little bit later on. But finally, regular listeners might recognise our next guest, as I think today marks his fourth appearance on the show, his first since he reported for us on Slovenia in episode 207. Welcome to journalist Rob Rees. Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, very well. I'm in Oxford. The dreaming spires are shrouded in fog at the moment, and it feels a million miles away from the Alps.
Cool. Well, regular listeners will know that I like to start the show off by asking where you skied or snowboarded last. And so, Nikki, guessing that's Chamonix, but I guess it could be anywhere. You run a tour operator.
Yeah, well, no, it was actually Chamonix last weekend. Like you said, Flégère lifts were open. So I was up last weekend and the weekend before. So that was a new first for me, skiing in October, which was very cool. And some nice fresh powder, which was amazing.
Nice. Okay. So the message I had was that, you know, there was a good amount of snowfall that came down around Flégère, but it warmed up fairly quickly. Would you see it that way?
Yeah, so I think I was lucky. The day I went up, which was a couple of weekends ago on the Sunday, the snow was amazing. Then the following weekend, it was, different conditions.
Oh, not bad, though. So you've already been skiing this season. Yeah. That's fantastic. Sara, I think you've already given the game away there. You were skiing last weekend as well in Iceland, right?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't manage to go skiing. I skied last in May in Iceland, yeah, on the glaciers.
Okay. Well, how far away are they from, you know, where you're based, the capital?
Well, you can drive 2 hours and then you're next to the glacier.
Fantastic. And Rob, what about yourself? When were you last on snow? Well,
not quite as lucky as the two ladies. It was the end of March. I was in the Dolomites and I was doing a piece for the Telegraph on the sort of hidden corners of the Dolomites. And it was the last day was at Oberegen or Val di Fiemme. So I was doing all the resorts on the that aren't really known to the British market on the edges of the Dolomites. So it was fantastic, an unbelievable day, actually, to finish the season. So,
Yeah, that sounds great. I went out to Dolomites for the first time last winter and liked it so much I ended up going out there twice in the end and, you know, really love that area. I haven't actually skied since, May in the UK snow domes, but I'm counting down the days now because in around about a month's time, I'll be going to St Anton and Lech and skiing a bit of Tyrol myself. So I'm really looking forward to that. But listen, if you've been following social media, and you know from our conversation just now, that October has been a pretty good month for early snow. In the States, Keystone, Winter Park, Arapo Basin have opened already. In Europe, we've got lift surf skiing. In Austria, Switzerland, Italy, Finland, Sweden and Norway, you can already ski on Tyrol's glaciers. If you'd like to know more about skiing in Austria in the autumn, I can refer you to episode 186. That was another episode that Rob appeared on when he gave us his tips on autumn skiing. Another regular contributor to the podcast is Robin Shah, and he was lucky enough to be in Verbier last weekend, which opened with limited skiing, but 4 weeks earlier than planned. So let's have a listen to how his day went.
Hi, Ian. Great to be with you, and what a way to kick off the new season here in Verbier. The snow came early. The resort opened on the 1st of November, and the excitement on the day was absolutely buzzing. Saturday started with a bit of sunshine breaking through early, then the clouds drifted in as the morning went on. That kind of soft, moody light still made the snow sparkle. You could just feel how happy everyone was, people just loving being back on skis again. Up at Lac des Vaux, the pistes were in great shape, firm, grippy, really nice for getting back into the swing of it, with some confidence-building carving turns. Then we spotted a couple of young guns dropping off the Lac des Vaux ridge into the off-piste, and my daughter looks at me and says, "Come on, Dad, let's go." So off we went, half expecting it to be a bit sharky, but it was perfect. The warm spell before the last top up, I packed in the base and there was a very nice 10 to 15 centimetres of fluffy powder sitting on top. Hardly touched a rock and just so good to get some early season powder turns in. By mid-morning, the Lac des Vaux lift queue was stretching to 10 or 15 minutes. So we decided to head down the other side towards Rouenet. The run is officially closed and not pisted, but it had already seen a fair bit of traffic. The coverage was surprisingly good, hardly a rock in sight, and it made for a fast, fun descent all the way down. Just watch out for the runnels because some people got caught out. And Ian, I think you saw that video from Xavier Leroux on Monday. He'd hiked up after the Sunday night snowfall and skied the Montgelée Bouquetin Couloir on the 3rd of November. The old pro can still pull it out of the bag. The footage is sensational. Please drop the link in your show notes because people need to see it. He has got bigger confidence levels than the rest of us put together. So a cracking start to the season. Verbier's open weekends now through November and full time from the 29th. The stoke is strong, the legs are burning and the mountain's properly waking up. So this is Robin reporting from Verbier and back to you, Ian.
And in North America, the first resort to open was Sunshine Valley in Canada. Long-term friend of the podcast, Kendra Scherfield, sent us this report.
Good morning, Ski Podcast listeners. It is Kendra Scherfield from Banff Sunshine Village, where we're about to enter day 5 of our ski and snowboard season. I know you're probably thinking, whoa, it's only November 6th and they're going into day 5? Yeah, it's true. We opened on November 2nd for our 25-26 ski and snowboard season. Our November 2nd opening is our earliest opening in at least 40 some years. So never in 40 years have we opened as early as we were able to this season. And we're lucky to do so thanks to Mother Nature. We were hit with a beautiful deep snowfall that allowed us to get our cats out and start grooming. At Sunshine, we don't make snow. In fact, we only have 2 snow guns in our artillery. Instead, we farm our snow, which is a process that starts in the summertime with the setup of steel fences. Once the snow starts flying, we put up fencing to capture all the flakes we can. Then our mountain ops teams work to spread out the snow, first pack it down, boot pack, ski pack, then track pack with the machines. And right now, the team is working really hard to get all of our terrain open. On Sunday, November 2nd, we did open as the first resort in Canada, woo, with Strawberry Express. An all-terrain off-the-chair was open, including a 7-feature terrain park with 2 lines. At present, our mountain ops team is working hard to get more terrain open for everyone's skiing and riding pleasure. You can find this on our social media at Sunshine Village on Instagram, TikTok, or Banff Sunshine Village on Facebook, as well as on our website, skibanff.com. If you're hoping to ski Sunshine Village this winter, you can do so with a Mountain Collective Pass, an Icon Pass, or get tickets directly through us or Ski Big Three. We hope to ski you all, and here's to winter.
Now, the last snow reports we had on the show were from the Carrick Smith brothers, who were training in Austria. Regular listeners will recall Freddie had his World Cup debut in the GS at Solden last week. He did extremely well for his first race at this level, finishing the first run with a decent time. It wasn't quite quick enough to qualify him for the second run, but it's a very positive start. And we wish him and his brothers all the best for the rest of the season. The next World Cup race is the slalom at Levy in 15-16 November. We're hoping that maybe one of the brothers might get a chance there. One more piece of news. If you listen to episode 219, that was over a year ago, you'll know that Larks was strongly linked as a possible acquisition by Vail Resorts. So interesting development since then. The local towns have bought the lift system, so no one else can. I'm going to put a link to that story in the show notes if you want to find out more. Let's meet our first guest today. Rob, I know you love Austria. I've mentioned you've joined us before to share your tips on skiing in Austria's glaciers in autumn. And I know you've been out to Innsbruck before. You've reported on the famous Four Hills ski jumping competition. But I wanted to invite you on the show today, as I know you're a huge fan of the Skivel area. That's one area, but there's 8 different resorts there. I wonder if you could start off by telling us, when were you last there?
I was there a couple of years ago. It was interesting because it was the last big area on my Austrian ski CV that I hadn't done, and it was sort of nagging away at me. I've driven past it a million times because it's on the way up from Virgul to Kitzbühel and all the sort of mountains near there. I've spent quite a bit of time there in the summer. I hadn't skied in it till a couple of years ago. I finally broke my duck a couple of years ago.
Oh, and just to kind of clarify then, I mean, you mentioned it's on that road between Virgul and Kitzbühel then. So it's kind of in the east of Tyrol then, relative to, let's say, St. Anton over in the west.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's at the far end of the Inntal Valley, and it's not far from Kufstein, which is obviously the gateway town from Bavaria, and Virgul, which is a huge transport hub, which was strategically very important in World War II. So.
Cool. And in terms of getting there then, what were the nearest airports be?
The good thing about Tyrol is you can get in via Innsbruck, Munich and Salzburg, but it's got very good train links. You can get the ICE all the way through Germany, so you can do it all by train. I think the train link goes through the Brixental valleys. You know, it's a flight-free option, and it's a delightful journey.
I mean, you anticipated my next question there, Rob, because I started off with the airports. Most people do fly, but what I do like about it is that you can take the train there. And you know, another way of doing it, I recently took the Eurostar to Amsterdam. From Amsterdam, you can get the OBB Nightjet directly down into that area, and they actually offer a package which includes a Nightjet and the lift ticket as well, so you can save yourself some money. Now, in my intro at the beginning, its official name is, excuse my German-Austrian pronunciation, but Skivel-Wilder-Kaiser-Brixental. It's a huge area. You know, it covers many different resorts. I wondered if you could give us a sense of the geography of the area and how those resorts fit together. Could you give us a sense of that?
Well, you've got the Inntal Valley, which is, you know, runs down the whole spine of Austria. You've got the sort of Kitzbühel Alps, and it's in between those. And you've got two valleys that go around the whole sort of Skivel mountain range. So you've got the Brixental Valley, and you've got this valley that looks out onto the Villa de Kaiser, which is a very impressive serrated mountain range. There are sort of 9 resorts off it. There's 20 skiable peaks, 270 kilometres apiece, and 82 lifts. And actually about 80% of the peaks are covered with artificial snowmaking. It's a big area, and it's very, very popular with the locals there. There's so many options, lots of circuits, lots of huts. And there you have to make a choice, because on the north side of the valley, which is the sort of Sol Elmau going valley, that's obviously north-facing slopes and tends to preserve the snow very well. The south side facing valley, which is the Brixental Valley, which is the one I actually prefer, has got a bit more character, a bit more open, a bit more sun, is linked into Westendorf and the whole Kitzbühel area.
So that's good. I understand now, you know, those resorts fit together. And a few of them I definitely, you know, familiar with, Elmau, Sol. Those resorts will be familiar to, you know, some skiers in the British market. But that Skivel area, I did a bit of research around it. I found the Skivel area was created in 1977. So it's coming up for around 50 years now. And I read it's always been, you know, quite an innovator in terms of lifts in particular.
Well, they've got a solar-powered lift over in Westendorf, a sort of drag lift, a connector lift. And they've always been, I think they've well over 100 million euros in the last few years. They've always been upgrading the gondolas. They've got big valley gondolas, whether that's up to the Hohe Salva or the Asperg. So it's an innovator.
Yeah, I read that, you know, originally they brought in the longest funicular in Europe. That was in Elmau, the first eight-seater chairlift in Europe. That was in Seoul. And you mentioned that in solar-powered lift. I think I was probably going to bring that up later on. But that came in 2008. You already mentioned you know, a bunch of other things in relation to the size of the ski area that I was going to bring up. I think you said like 270 kilometers a piece, 80 lifts. Is there like a circuit? You were talking about the Dolomites earlier. You know, you could do the Sella Ronda there in two different directions. I read about the Schiefeld Tour that you could do. Have you tried that at all?
I've done parts of that. I've sort of gone all the way over to the Hohe Salva and then back again. But there are, I think, three or four different routed tours. They are relatively well signposted. The whole ski belt takes a few days to get to know. Once you get to know it, there's multiple options. You can go off, obviously, onto the north side very easily. You can go across as far as Westendorf, and you can even nip over to Kitzbühel and Kirkeberg.
Yeah, I realise with 8-9 resorts, it might be hard to categorise. Well, what sort of skiers do you think the Schiefeld would suit?
I think it's definitely a great place to learn, because you've got, you know, interesting villages like Sol, which has got a lively atmosphere, and villages like Elmau, which obviously a bit more traditional. And it's for people who like sort of relatively easy red-blue skiing and skiing through trees and in sunny climes. So I think it's good for progressing intermediates, I would say.
I was looking on their website earlier. They got some really good deals for families. Children up to the age of 15 can get free lift tickets in low season. They've got like a young family ski pass as well, which I thought was quite cool. If you've got like a young child, you can buy one lift ticket that two people can share. So the two adults can, one of them can be doing the childcare and the other one can be off skiing and come back. I thought that was a really nice idea. Tobogganing and cross country and things like that as well. Night skiing in Seoul. Have you ever tried that?
No, I haven't, but it's the biggest night skiing in Austria. I think there's 10 kilometres apiece. And there's, you know, it's well provisioned with ski schools as well, 22 ski schools. So it's certainly an innovating resort, and it's, you know, been innovating in the eco area as well.
Interesting you bring that up, because that was like next on my list as well. You know, they're really good on sustainability. I read somewhere that they use 100% green electricity.
Yeah, they do it all through hydroelectricity. I think it's through the Tiroler hydroelectric company. So that, and all that water gets recycled from the artificial snowmaking, and that's all drinking quality water. So they're absolutely at the forefront of all of this. They've won multiple awards. So from a green perspective, it's probably one of the leading areas in the world.
We mentioned the Sonnenlift, you know, that solar-powered lift, which I find really interesting. I know they've been putting more solar around the resort as well, and they're using heat pumps as well for the lift buildings. And, you know, back in episode 259, when I was chatting with Fritz about San Johann in Tirol, he was raving about the mountain huts. I read that there are over 80 in the Schiefeld. You know, what are they like? Is there anything that you think people should definitely try if they're eating there?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of huts that are noteworthy, but it's the classic Tyrolean cuisine. I don't know how much of that you've covered, but obviously there's things like the Tiroler Grostel, the Gurmknödel, the you know, Heiße Schokolade, and obviously Kaiserschmarrn. A lot of the huts are actually alms, farmers' alms in the summer. They go up to the alm, they take the cattle up there as part of the three-stage farming process. So a lot of the stuff you'll be served in the alms is cheese and meats that they've actually grown themselves. And obviously, being Tyrol, there's a lot of artisanal producers. So there's cider from the valley, schnapps from the valley. And a particularly nice hut I went to was the Kummer Alm, and that's just above Elmau. And then obviously one of the more spectacular places for a view is the rotating restaurant at the Hohe Salva, which is the far end of the resort, closer to Vergeln. You can literally see down the whole of the Inntal. You can see the Hohe Tower, and you can see the Grossglockner, and you can see, you know, literally resorts like Outback and Zillertal. It's a beautiful place. I don't think, the thing about Austria, if it's not a good hut, it won't be in business, as simple as that. Unlike in countries like France, where they'll be surly, expensive, and, you know, the food won't be particularly good. Actually, in Austria, if it's no good, it won't survive. So you go in anywhere, basically, and get good food, and a lot of it's locally produced.
Oh, I like the sound of that. The Hohe Salva, did you say that was a revolving restaurant?
Yes, it is. It's a revolving restaurant, so it's quite an unusual place. So you can sit and let the world go by as you tuck into your huge Tiroler Grostel. Always remember, as a young man, I could do a Kaiserschmarrn after a Tiroler Grostel, but I think I can manage a goulash supper now is about all I can manage at lunch.
And you're going to have to tell our listeners what those things are.
Okay, well, Tiroler Grosse is like a sort of bubble and squeak. It's sort of like a potatoes and bacon and with an egg on top in a lovely sort of skillet. That's the classic cuisine. You've got Kaiserschmarrn, which is a sort of shredded pancake with sort of currants in and an apfel mousse or a Svetchkin prune sauce. There's a whole story about how that was created. And obviously you've got lots of lovely desserts. And, you know, you have your apfel strudel, you have your Gurmknödel, which is like a, what do they call it, a dumpling. You have sweet ones of those, you have savoury ones of those. I mean, the food is what they would call glushtigs and, you know, hearty, real sort of mountain food.
And what about après-ski or after-ski, we should probably call it. Après is a bit of a French term.
Yeah, no.
Have you partaken in that, Rob?
I spent my first three times skiing in France, went to Austria and didn't go back for 30 years because it's so good. The things like the Folie Douche are a relatively new invention. The Austrians start their après-ski at 3:30 on the mountain. And if it's a good evening, you might be skiing down in the dark at 8 o'clock as they throw you out of the hut. So, yeah, it's brilliant. Most of it, you know, happens in the mountains. Obviously, resorts like Sol have got a reputation for good après-ski. And you know, Sol was one of the first sort of package tour resorts in the 70s when we were still using shillings. It's always been affordable, a bit like Suzy Du in the Via Letirien. It's an affordable resort and it's a lot of fun. So I think the thing about the ski belt is it caters for everybody, families, you know, loving couples, groups of guys who just want to go on the razzle, learners. It's just a nice place.
Cool. Okay. Well, that is Skiveld Wilderkaiser Brixental. And thanks very much, Rob, for getting us to understand it a little bit better. I'm really enjoying finding out more about the resorts of the Tyrol. And I can't believe we haven't really covered so many of them before. But if it's okay with you, I'm going to turn to Nikki and Sarah now to discuss a complete country that we've never covered before on the Ski Podcast. And that is Iceland. Now, there's a lot to cover here. I read that you were putting on a women's only ski touring trip to Iceland, and that sounded really interesting to me. In fact, it was only in episode 256 when Bethany Garner told us about her all-female ski touring trip to Norway. But before we come to Iceland, Nikki, I wondered if I could ask you a few questions about your journey to where you are now. I thought my roots in skiing were long. My parents met in a ski resort, actually Obergurgl in Austria. But your grandparents met in a ski resort. Is that right?
Yeah, they did, actually. They met in Murren back in 1947. They were married 6 months later. and my great-grandmother, so my grandmother's mother, was actually skiing back in 1912. So before chairlifts were invented, we've got some amazing old photos of her in long woolen skirt, blouse, 2.30 meter skis, obviously wooden with the cable bindings back then. And then on the other side as well, my parents met through a ski committee in Dundee University. And then my mum's side of the family also grew up skiing in Scotland. So it's definitely in the blood on both sides.
Oh, I love that. And there's actually a page on your website with a little bit of the history in there, which I was scrolling through, really enjoying it. Your family featured on the cover of the Ingham's brochure in 1971.
it wasn't the cover, but it was inside page something or other. But my dad and one of my aunties were out skiing, and the whole family would go out to Vengen every year for a few weeks, and they'd all be racing and for the DHO.
DHO being the downhill only club, which is kind of like, I don't know, a rival of the Kandahar club, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, DHO were based in Vengen, and then Kandahar were over the other side in Murren. I'd say a friendly rivalry, but others might say otherwise.
I mean, that's a different podcast in itself. But thinking about the racing side of things, I also read on there that I think your grandmother sponsored, at one point was sponsoring up-and-coming female ski racers.
Yeah, so she set up a fund with the Skiers Trust called the Penny Maybe Fund, which was to, sponsor up-and-coming female skiers in their hopes of getting to the Olympics. In fact, before this podcast, I was doing a little bit of research with my family and asking about their background. And turned out my granny was actually asked to ski for the Winter Olympics back in 1944, which was then cancelled because of the World War II. But I think it was you know, just the fact that she could actually ski. There was no qualifications back then, just a rare feat that a woman was skiing back in those days.
Okay, well, that is a brilliant story. Let's come bring us up to date a little bit. You started maybe skiing in 2017. Can I ask you specifically about this particular ski touring trip? What prompted you to put it together?
Lots of different reasons. So whenever we're looking for a new destination, we're always looking for that sort of combination of good skiing, something unique, and local experience, which we have in all of our other destinations. So Iceland is a new destination for us, and it's sort of the remote wildness of the country drew me in. And when I met with Olaf, who's the owner of Soti Summit and Soti Lodge, you know, female owner, really passionate about Iceland and ski touring in the region. And we just hit it off, and we were talking about getting, you know, more women into ski touring. And we said, well, why don't we put together a women's ski touring trip? And then she introduced me to Sara, who's a force to be reckoned with. And so we put it all together. And yeah, and it's only been live a few weeks, and we've already had four signups. So.
Oh, well, you mentioned Sara. It seems like a good time to turn to you. Perhaps I should be addressing you as Captain Sara Sigurðardóttir, because you're an Iceland Air pilot.
Yes, I fly as a captain for Iceland Air. That's correct.
And you ski guide, what, in your spare time, right?
Yeah, well, I like to take some months off in the spring to ski, and I actually identify much more as a skier than as a pilot. So that's my main passion.
You're a qualified ski guide, and you're going to be taking this particular trip. You're heading to the Troll Peninsula, which just sounds like an amazing name. And then, you know, most people would be worried about any bridges they cross during that particular trip. But what can participants expect there in the Troll Peninsula?
Yeah, the Troll Peninsula lies in the north of Iceland, just shy of the Arctic Circle. It lies in 66 degrees north, actually, and we get all the snow coming in from the north. It usually has a lot of snow, and you can often ski in the area until mid-June. So it has great snow. You can fly to Akureyri, which is the capital of the north, directly, or you can fly in to Keflavik and explore Iceland while you travel north. Soti is located in a historic area. You mentioned it's called the Troll Peninsula, and we have a rich history of trolls traveling in the area. And as you know, we have elves and trolls in Iceland.
I can't claim I did know that you have elves and trolls in Iceland, but I haven't been there, so I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah. We will be exploring the area. I will tell people stories of how isolated it was once, and people were terrified of traveling on skis through the fjords. And that was the only way to travel, either by sea or walk. And people used skis. And actually, the mountain next to our hut or our lodge is where the first ski competition in Iceland was hosted.
A lot of history there. What about thinking about it, say there's someone listening to this podcast now and thinking, right, you know, that sounds really appealing, apart from the threat of trolls, etc. How tough will the ski touring be? What sort of vertical are we looking at? How fit do you need to be to do this?
It's not steep, and I would not say that it's tough for someone that knows how to ski. I mean, the ski condition can vary from day to day. We sometimes have powder, and we sometimes have corn snow, and it has many melt freeze cycles, the snow over there, because it's facing the north. Temperatures are around 0 to -10 degrees tops. We're skiing around 1,000 vertical meters per day. It has steep gullies if people are seeking that, but we usually don't take clients unless they ask for it to the steeper slopes. Yeah, for a person that skis, it's not that hard.
What kind of altitudes are we talking about? This isn't a hut-to-hut ski touring trip. You're based out of one particular accommodation, which looks really nice.
The highest peaks in the area are a little over 1,500, but we are skiing peaks that are around 1,100. And you ski from sea level. As you said, we'll stay in the lodge, which is Soti Lodge, named after the peak next to it. And we will be based there, relaxing in the geothermal pool located next to it, which it has water coming directly from the earth, so pure and clean, no chlorine in that water. Olav, the owner, will take us through floating ceremonies in the after each ski tour. We have steam baths and hot tubs. It's so nice.
Cool. I mean, I think most people, even if they haven't been to Iceland, will know that the geothermal pools are pretty amazing. You're saying that there's one kind of right next to the lodge?
Yeah, it has been renovated, but initially it was one of the oldest pools in Iceland. And we had to build pools and use this hot water because we are a fishery nation. The men going out to sea were drowning, and they soon learned that we have to know how to swim. And they started using this hot water to build pools very early to teach fishermen how to swim.
Okay, I did not know that. That's really interesting. And, you know, you're obviously a female guide. I think you, Nikki, said that the lodge is female-owned, and the point is that this is an all-female mountain environment. What prompted you, Nikki, if I can just turn back to you, to put that together? You know, what's the concept here?
Yeah, I mean, we've run quite a lot of female ski touring trips before, mainly over in Canada when I was based there for a few years. And it's always just really nice to bring women together. I think people feel more confident in an all-female environment. And it just provides a really nice, supportive group where people can push their boundaries and ski terrain that they didn't necessarily think they were going to ski. And in a really supportive environment with the hosts and the guides. And yeah, it's really exciting to be able to do that in a new destination as well.
Oh, well, you know, that sounds really interesting. I'm going to put a link in the show notes so that listeners can look up the details of the itinerary. But just remind us when this trip is taking place.
So it's 14th to 21st of March next year. There's direct flights into Akureyri from London, also from Manchester.
Cool. And, you know, it's an inclusive trip. Does that also include guaranteed sightings of elves and trolls?
We might see some. It's always a possibility.
Well, that is brilliant. It sounds like a really good trip. Like I say, I'm going to put a link in the show notes about that. Right, we're just going to move to the close now. I always enjoy listener feedback. I love to hear what you think about the show. You can leave a comment on Spotify, Instagram, Facebook. My handle is @theskipodcast. Or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp. I release exclusive material on there ahead of the podcast. So you can look in the show notes for that link. A couple of bits of feedback since the last episode. Emmanuel John said, love the Innsbruck Interroll episode. That was number 257. Matt Hayes said, keep up the great work on the podcast. He also shared some thoughts on the London Snow Show, which we covered in episode 260. He said, what a show. I've never been to Olympia before. Being from the Northwest, when it moved from Birmingham, I was disappointed. But I have to say, this year was superb. So that's really interesting. I'm sure, again, James Gamble, organiser of the show, will be interested to hear that as well. And Stir, who's a user on Snowheads, the forum there, he said, the Blaine Lines and Fiona Easdale episodes are some of the most interesting and engaging I've heard. Thank you, Stir. But the How to Become a Ski Patrol episode with Tom Greenall must be the best of the lot. And I'm really pleased to hear you say that, because I actually recorded that several years ago and republished it this summer, because I did think it was good. And it's before we had as many listeners as we do now. So listen, if you want to just track back, you'll be able to find that one. In fact, if you haven't listened to any of those episodes, you can do so really easily. We have 280 episodes of the Ski Podcast now to catch up with. 151 of those were listened to in the last week alone. There's so much in the back catalogue. Just go to skipodcast.com, have a search around. You can look at the tags and categories. You're bound to find something that you will find interesting about our wonderful world of skiing and snowboarding. And in that last week, around half of our listeners were in the UK, 20% in the States. Everyone else spread as far and wide as Malta, Malaysia and Morocco. By the way, listener, a couple of people have contacted me to ask for stickers. If you would like some for your helmet, skis, phone, wherever you want to stick it, just drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com with your address and I'll get some out to you. In the meantime, if you'd like to help the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. You can follow us. You know, just like pause now, click that subscribe button. You'll never miss an episode. You can give us a review. Apple Podcasts. I'd love to see another review on Apple Podcasts. We haven't had one for a while. Or you can leave a comment on Spotify. But probably easier, and we get quite a few of those. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget, you can save money on your ski hire. You get an additional discount using the code SKIPODCAST when you book at InSportRent.com. Just take the link in the show notes, and you can get your discount automatically applied. Right. For now, I would like to thank my guest today, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
How do you say thank you in Icelandic?
Takk fyrir.
Yeah, that is what I would have said if I could speak Icelandic. Nikki, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ian. Great to be on.
Oh, and Rob, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Ian. Thank you very much.
Cool. I'd like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.